look at your last electricity bill. Like, really think about that physical piece of paper or, the PDF on your
Yeah,
screen.
you probably just looked at the total, winced a little bit, and paid it.
Exactly. Most of us just treat it as this inevitable chore. But if you actually know how to read the line items, that document is basically a treasure map.
It really is. It charts this massive, super complex system that connects, global conflicts to local politics.
Right, and it highlights this incredibly frustrating infrastructure bottleneck, along with a massive paradox about our supposed green future.
Yeah, the whole green energy transition. It's a lot more complicated than it looks on paper.
So true. So today's deep dive is taking a magnifying glass to the Prince Edward Island energy landscape. We're using the Business Edge report as our main guide for this.
And honestly, even if you don't live on PEI or, run a business there, what's happening on that island is a perfect microcosm for the rest of us.
Completely. Our mission today is to decode the hidden taxes, explain why your costs are basically structurally guaranteed to rise, and explore the whole catch-22 of modern electrification.
Yeah, it's a masterclass in how utility monopolies actually function in the real world. It really lays bare how political incentives dictate the price you pay just to keep the lights on.
Right. You are going to see exactly how the sausage is made here.
Prepare yourself.
Okay, let's unpack this. Before we look at where energy prices are going, and the report is super adamant that they are only going up, we have to establish the baseline first.
Right. Where are we starting from?
Exactly. Let's look at the raw mechanics of a standard PEI power bill. So if you're a residential consumer, that first chunk of energy you use has a base rate of 17.23 cents per kilowatt hour.
Which is pretty steep.
Very steep. And for a commercial business, it jumps to 21.13 cents for that first block. Plus, there's this connection fee of $24.57 every single month per meter.
And that per meter detail, I mean, that is a massive structural cost that people completely overlook.
Right, because before a single electron even flows into your house, you owe $25.
Exactly. Now consider an apartment building with, say, 30 units, or an industrial park subdivided into different bays. You are paying that $25 fee 30 times over every single month.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That stacks up aggressively.
It really does. But to truly grasp how heavy that 17.23 cents per kilowatt hour is, we have to look at the broader market. So in neighboring Quebec, residents pay roughly 8.5 cents.
Wait, 8.5, that is literally half the price.
Half the price. It's a staggering difference. And the gap is even worse on the commercial side. The report highlights Manitoba, where businesses pay a mere 9.69 cents per kilowatt hour.
Compared to the 21 cents on PEI, that's brutal.
Right. If you're running a manufacturing facility or even just a retail store, those input costs dictate your survival. Like every fraction of a cent matters.
And we have to remember the geography here, too. Like, almost everything arrives on PEI via the Confederation Bridge or by truck.
Yeah, you're already battling high transportation costs.
Exactly. In a market where oil is hovering around $100 a barrel, and, with global conflicts threatening to push it even higher.
The source material actually projects that if those geopolitical conflicts drag out, oil could spike to $200 a barrel.
200. For an island economy that imports heavily, that's just a devastating prospect.
Absolutely devastating.
But diving back into the physical bill itself, there is this specific line item that completely obscures the reality of what people are actually paying.
Ah, yes.
The rebate, right. It's a 10% residential rebate introduced by the Dennis King administration. And when you read how the report describes the mechanics of this, I mean, it sounds identical to a retail store marking up a jacket by 15% and then handing you a 10% coupon so you feel like you won.
That analogy perfectly captures what the report basically calls a political shell game.
Right.
Let's break down the underlying math. Consumers on PEI pay a 15% harmonized sales tax, the HST, on virtually everything, including utility bills.
So the government is taxing your power at 15%.
Exactly. But to, alleviate the sting of high prices, the administration introduced this 10% rebate specifically for residential consumers.
So they apply a 15% tax and then give you back 10%.
Which means you are still paying a net 5% tax. You're just getting an advance on a tax burden you're already carrying.
Visually, it feels fantastic, right? You look at your bill, see a deduction labeled rebate, and think you save money.
But structurally, the government is just taking slightly less of your money than they originally claimed.
It's pretty brilliant from an economic and political strategy standpoint, honestly. It masks the true cost from the voter.
It really does. It was framed as this temporary relief measure, but now it's fully baked into consumer expectations.
And the source material points out that removing it now would be political suicide.
Oh, entirely. The report bluntly suggests that if they slash that 10% benefit, there would be riots on the streets.
Wow. And just to be clear for the listener, we are looking at this strictly as an economic mechanism, right? We're not taking a stance on the policy itself.
Right. No political science here. It just perfectly illustrates how governments can manipulate the presentation of a bill to pacify voters.
But what makes it even more fascinating is that businesses are totally excluded from this. Commercial properties do not see that 10% rebate at all.
Well, the political calculus there is pretty straightforward. The largest, loudest voting bloc is residential. So the individual gets the visible relief.
Right. Businesses don't vote the same way.
Exactly. Now, businesses do eventually claim that 15% HST back as an input tax credit when they file their federal taxes.
But in the short term.
In the short term, day-to-day operations, the absence of that rebate artificially inflates their cash flow requirements. They have to float that cost.
Which just makes it harder to compete with those lower rates in Manitoba or Quebec.
Exactly.
So we've established the baseline, steep rates, meter fees, and a disguised tax burden. With that foundation set, the report makes a really aggressive claim.
That prices are absolutely guaranteed to go up.
Yes. And that certainty stems from the legal structure of the grid and three monumental bills coming due.
What's fascinating here is the regulatory structure of the utility itself. PEI does not generate the vast majority of its own power.
Right. Aside from some wind farms.
Yeah, aside from a few wind farms, the island is essentially just a transmission and distribution network. And the entity responsible for managing that grid is Maritime Electric.
Which is owned by Fortis, right? The massive corporation in Newfoundland.
Exactly.
Wait, so if they don't even generate the power and they just manage the wires as a regulated monopoly, ensuring them a profit sounds like a bad deal for the consumer.
Yeah.
Like the report says they have a legally guaranteed return on equity of 9.35%. Where is their incentive to keep costs down if their profit is baked into the law?
You're hitting on the core tension of what economists call the regulatory compact.
Okay, what is that?
Building and maintaining an electrical grid requires an incomprehensible amount of upfront capital. If we relied entirely on a free market, private companies would only build power lines to profitable urban centers.
Right, rural areas would just be left in the dark.
Exactly. So to solve this, governments grant a single company a monopoly. No competition, but universal coverage. In exchange for taking that capital risk, the company is legally promised a specific return on investment.
Which in this case is 9.35%, which, by the way, is noticeably higher than the 8.5% return allowed in Newfoundland, where the parent company actually lives.
Yeah, that is a very interesting detail. But it means whatever investments Maritime Electric is forced to make, like replacing wooden poles or building substations, they're assured near a 9.35% return.
And they collect that return directly through our monthly rates.
Exactly. Which brings us to the cascading series of capital liabilities the island is facing. The report puts these into three massive investment buckets.
Let's trace these because none of them seem optional. The first bucket is for the Point Lepereau nuclear plant.
Right.
Now, this is an off-island facility in New Brunswick. PEI relies heavily on it for stable baseload power. But nuclear plants need complex refurbishments.
And this specific project suffered from extended outages and severe cost overruns.
Which PEI has to pay for?
Yes. The report calculates that Islanders will absorb a 7% hit to their bills just to cover this. It totals about $32 million.
That's wild. Ratepayers on an island are paying for the construction failures of a facility in another province.
Because the PEI grid is tethered to that off-island baseload, they are a captive audience to those costs.
Okay, so that's the locked-in $32 million. Then there's the next liability, natural disasters. The report calls this the Fiona hangover.
Hurricane Fiona wasn't just a few knocked-down branches. It brought severe saltwater corrosion, snapped primary transmission arteries, and devastated the infrastructure.
Right. Maritime Electric had to mobilize this massive army of crews to rebuild.
And repairing a destroyed grid isn't treated like an insured loss. Rebuilding those lines is considered a capitalized infrastructure investment.
Ah, so it goes back to that guaranteed return.
Exactly. Maritime Electric has petitioned IRAC, the Regulatory Commission, for $37 million to cover the restoration.
And when that gets approved, the report says it translates to an additional 2.4% annual increase for every consumer.
Yes. But neither of those compare to the third liability.
Right, the big one.
You rebuild the grid after a storm, and then you realize the grid simply isn't robust enough to handle the future. Maritime Electric recently decommissioned an old, inefficient diesel plant on the Charlottetown waterfront.
And because demand is surging, they have to replace it. The estimated price tag is $427 million.
And the source material bluntly warns it could easily surpass $500 million by completion.
$500 million local asset. That's a generational financial burden.
It fundamentally alters the math for the entire province. This is a permanent structural shift in what it costs to live and do business on the island for the next 30 to 40 years.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. That $427 million plant exposes the most glaring contradiction in this entire deep dive.
The policy paradox.
Yes. There's a massive collision between green energy ambitions and the brutal physics of keeping the island from going dark. Policymakers are urging you to electrify everything for net zero goals, right?
Buy an EV, install high-efficiency heat pumps. The messaging is super aggressive.
But consider Tuesday in late January. It's freezing. At 5 p.m., the sun is down, everyone gets home, the temperature plummets, so tens of thousands of heat pumps kick on simultaneously.
Thousands of EVs get plugged in. Electric ovens turn on.
Exactly. The physical strain on the grid at that exact moment is catastrophic. You're looking at near brownout conditions because the system just can't push enough electrons through the wires.
And that's the paradox. The government mandates this transition to electricity, creating unprecedented, violently sharp demand spikes.
But a power grid requires absolute stability. Hospitals and water pumps can't just lose power because everyone turned their oven on.
Right. So to prevent a total collapse during that winter peak, Maritime Electric has no choice but to build that $427 million plant on the waterfront as a safety net.
And here's the kicker. The fuel that this brand new $500 million facility will burn. Dirty, traditional diesel fuel.
It is a staggering irony.
You buy an EV to reduce carbon emissions, but the electricity powering your car on a freezing night is generated by a newly constructed fossil fuel burner.
The island is forced to, as the report phrases it, refossilize to maintain stability.
But why are they building a new diesel plant in the 2020s? Why not a cleaner transition fuel, like liquefied natural gas?
This is where physical geography overrides environmental intentions. Even if the turbines were dual fuel, PEI suffers from a fatal bottleneck. There's no active natural gas pipeline reaching the island.
Wait, it doesn't cross the bridge?
No. The pipeline literally terminates on the New Brunswick side of the Confederation Bridge. It stops at the water.
So how do industrial consumers get LNG right now?
They literally have it driven over the bridge in specialized trucks. Every single one.
Oh my God. Trucking natural gas over a bridge to run a $500 million municipal power plant, that's logistically impossible.
Completely. The volume you'd need during a winter peak would require an endless convoy of trucks. It's way too fragile a supply chain for grid stability.
And extending the pipeline is probably out of the question.
It would take immense capital, political will, and decades of environmental approvals. So diesel is deemed the only viable engineering solution.
Because it can be stored in massive tanks on site and throttle up the engines in minutes.
Right. Which permanently tethers the island's green transition to the volatile global oil market.
Critics are furious about this, naturally. Locking the future into fossil fuels and placing a diesel plant on the prime waterfront of the capital city.
The report does note that the minister responsible, Gilles Arsenault, defends the location. He says it leverages existing transmission infrastructure so they don't have to build new pathways.
Okay, but surely, as a consumer, there's a way to hack this system. If the grid is buckling at 5 p.m., can I just program my EV to charge at 2 a.m. or run my dishwasher in the middle of the night to save money?
The logic of shifting demand is the foundation of modern grid management. In other places, you have time-of-use pricing, where the utility rewards you with cheaper rates at night. But PEI cannot currently offer this because they liked the physical technology.
Are you saying my rate is identical whether I use power during a peak crisis at 5 p.m. or at 3 a.m.?
Yes. To offer dynamic pricing, a utility needs smart meters that log exactly when an electron is used. Many meters on the island are still fundamentally analog.
You're kidding.
No, they measure total volume over a month, like a car's odometer. Mm-hmm. They have no idea what time of day you used the power.
So the billing structure penalizes you based on your highest peak consumption, but gives you zero financial discount for voluntarily shifting to off-peak hours.
Exactly.
That is maddening. You're asked to be a responsible citizen and buy a heat pump, but the system lacks the basic software to reward you for using it efficiently.
It's a huge blind spot.
Okay, what about the commercial side? If you're an industrial park with 10 businesses getting crushed by that 21-cent rate, couldn't you pool your money, build a microgrid with solar and batteries, and share the power?
But the regulatory framework snickily prohibits it.
Seriously.
Yeah, this goes back to the absolute legal power of the monopoly. Independent businesses cannot generate and share electricity across property lines.
Because Maritime Electric owns the exclusive legal right to transmit power.
Right. You cannot legally string a high-voltage wire between two private buildings. You're mandated by law to put your generated power back onto their official infrastructure.
So the lock on the physical wires is impenetrable.
The only notable anomaly in this whole system is the city of Summerside. They had the historical foresight to retain ownership of their own municipal utility.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, they generate a lot of their own electricity through wind farms. The report actually calls them a bastion of energy productivity. They control their local rates to a degree.
But I'm guessing they still face some hurdles.
Oh, definitely. Even Summerside can't escape the physics of the island. When the wind stops blowing and they need baseload power from the mainland, they don't own a private underwater cable.
Ah, they have to use Maritime Electric's transmission lines.
Exactly, meaning they are still subject to the transmission tolls of the monopoly.
So what does this all mean? When we zoom out and look at this architecture, you're living in an isolated system where global oil shocks dictate your daily living costs.
Yep.
Your base rates are double what they are in hydro-rich provinces. You're bound to a legally guaranteed monopoly where massive rate hikes are mathematical certainties.
Driven by nuclear failures, hurricanes, and that $500 million plant.
And most incredibly, you're caught in this bizarre feedback loop where government mandates for green tech force the construction of a massive diesel generator just to keep the green devices running.
Summarizing all those compounding pressures at once, it can definitely feel overwhelming.
For sure.
But dissecting these mechanisms is essential. When you view a power bill simply as a demand for money, you just feel powerless.
Right.
But understanding the specific structural choke points, like realizing an unfinished pipeline forces reliance on diesel, or that lack of smart meters prevents you from lowering your bill, it transforms that frustration into clarity.
Absolutely. Recognizing how the gears of this regulatory compact turn is the first step toward demanding more intelligent energy policies.
You have to know the rules of the game before you can change them.
Exactly. It all begins with understanding the anatomy of that piece of paper they mail you every 30 days. But we want to leave you with one final thought to mull over.
What's that?
We've mapped out how the legal monopoly controls the transmission lines and how our green ambitions are tethered to a traditional diesel safety net.
Right.
If grid stability requires refossilization and regulatory laws prevent communities and businesses from sharing their own clean energy, does achieving true environmental sustainability require a total dismantling of who is legally allowed to own the power lines?
Wow. That is a question that challenges the entire century-old foundation of how we define and distribute energy.
Something to think about the next time you hear your heat pump kick on in the dead of winter. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the source material.